Slavery and the Troubled History of America's University, Ebony and Ivy. Sadly, we're out of time. I just can't believe it. Thank you for joining us.
It did go quickly.
We are out of time. I'd like to thank our guest, Professor Craig S. Wilder. Today's show was produced by Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the entire Sojourner Truth team. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
It's 10:01. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned at 10:15 for Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock on the Dirtbag, Glenn Andreessen will be here to talk all things gardening. And he'll be taking your calls. And we thank you, KBOO members, for your support again. You can stay informed and get involved here by going to kboo.fm. And you can click on Donate to become a member there. Thank you. And coming up next, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. We're going to go right to Flashpoints for this morning. Thanks for tuning into KBOO, KBOO Portland.
Flashpoints will feature a wide-ranging hour-long discussion and speak out on the U.S. summit with North Korea. We'll talk about the significance of what did and did not happen, what we can expect from it, the kind of responses to it we've seen from the, well, the civic response, the media, the political, and of course, we'll examine the bigger geopolitical picture, and we'll also take listener calls, so get your questions ready. I'm Dennis Bernstein with my guest co-host for today's special broadcast, KJ No. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And and you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is Dennis Bernstein. Well, I guess you have all heard that the President of the United States has met the leader of North Korea. There was a summit, and among the other things that we heard about, Trump said they're going to hold off on the massive military exercises. Did he really mean that? Do I have to clear my eyes and ears? Did that really happen? Well, we're going to spend this hour talking about it again. We're going to invite you to call. So get ready with your questions. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Let's begin with our special correspondent for the region, KJ No. KJ, give us your initial response. What did you see happening here? What are some of the highlights? Set it up for us.
Yes, yeah, so as we all know, there was a meeting between President Trump and Chairman Kim on Sentosa Island in Singapore for the North Korea-U.S. summit. There was a handshake, and then there was a one-on-one meeting, and then they walked together. They had a private session just between themselves for about 40 minutes, after which they went into a working luncheon. And at the end of the working luncheon, they signed a document, and President Trump said that, you know, this is a very important document, pretty comprehensive document, and he said, we have developed a special bond. The meeting was far better than anyone ever predicted, and we're starting the process. And then if we look at the document, you know, quite extraordinary. It says that the United States and the DPRK commit to establish a new U.S.-DPRK relationship in accordance with the desire of the peoples of the two countries for peace and prosperity. The second clause is that U.S. and DPRK will join the efforts to build a lasting, stable peace regime on the Korean Peninsula. And then they will reaffirm the April 27th Panmunjom Declaration, committing the DPRK to complete denuclearization. And fourth, the U.S. and DPRK commit to recovering POW missing in action remains. Now, of this, the third clause, people have criticized this as being very aspirational and mostly lacking substance. But the most important clause is the third one, which is reaffirming the April 27th Panmunjom Declaration, because that is the declaration that was made between North Korea and South Korea, which means that North Korea and South Korea are in the driver's seat. And secondly, that document lays out the work which is already done before. The Panmunjom Declaration says that we will uphold all previous agreements between North and South. And so what they're saying there is the path to peace is already set. The paperwork is already done. Let's move forward on that.
And just, I guess one of the biggest surprises was the suggestion by Trump that they would, the U.S. would cancel the military exercises. That was extraordinary. The way it's reported in the corporate press is it even caught the South Koreans off balance, and they, you know, literally it was implied that they opposed it. They were shocked. This wasn't something they were expecting.
Well, I think they were thrown off balance. They were not expecting it, but I don't think that they're opposed to it. I would say that the largest percentage of Korean, South Koreans are opposed to the military exercises. Just to give you a little bit of background on that, remember the military exercises started in the late 60s. I mean, the original military exercises were what they called Taeguk Yonsep, started in 1968, and this became what we now refer to as the Uchi Freedom Guardian, which involves about 70,000 troops. That is the smaller exercise. The larger exercise is Fall Eagle, which is a field training exercise, and that developed out of Team Spirit and the previous RSOI exercises. That involves 300,000 troops, That makes it the world's largest military exercises, and those numbers are twice the size of the D-Day Normandy invasion. This happens for 2 months, and during this process, they rehearse and practice the preemptive strikes, decapitation on North Korea. So clearly they are very, very provocative. Clearly they're very, very aggressive. We can say that they re-trigger North Korea's collective PTSD. And when President Trump came out and said, you know, these drills are inappropriate and they are provocative, I had a Bullworth moment, you know, this notion that when a politician makes a gaffe, you know, that's really when he's telling the truth. The party line, the standard line that the officials always say is that the drills are routine, defensive, and absolutely critical for peace. It's absolutely not true. They are offensive because that is the nature of Op Plan 5015, which is a decapitation strike. And they are an agglomeration of previous plans, namely Op Plan 5027, which was revised in 1998 to include a full invasion of North Korea. So the North Koreans are correct on this point, and when Donald Trump named it, it was a rare moment of truth.
Okay, let's bring our guests into it. That's the voice of KJ No. I want to also let people know later on, you will be our guests. So please develop your questions, write them down. Give us a sense of what you want to know and give us a call. But joining us first, and we're delighted to have both of them, is Tim Beal. Tim Beal is an expert on East Asian politics, economy, and geopolitics. He is a former professor of Victoria University of Wellington in New Zealand, as well as the founding director of the Center for Asia Pacific Law and Business, and is the author of two highly acclaimed books on Korea, Crisis in Korea, America, China, and the Risk of War, and also North Korea, the Struggle Against American Power. Tim Beal, welcome to Flashpoints.
Hello. Yes, good to be here.
Good to have you with us. And also joining us is Christine Ahn. Christine Ahn is the founder and international coordinator of Women Cross the DMZ, a global movement of women mobilizing to end the Korean War, reunite families, and ensure women's leadership in peace building. And they have been instrumental in calling attention to the need for this kind of discussion and really fighting to end, finally, the Korean War. Christine Ahn, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Let me start with you, Christine. Your initial response, and were you surprised that Trump told the truth about what those exercises were really about?
I mean, it was extraordinary to hear some of the things that he had said as if he was taking talking points from the Korea Peace Network or some other group that, you know, I have been a part of. And to use terms such as war games and to say that they are provocative, I mean, you know, that is... in many ways, the genius of Donald Trump is in his unhingedness. There is, he can't be scripted. And so it was amazing. And that, you know, he was saying that this costs U.S. taxpayers so much money. And, you know, it's extraordinary to me. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now. I've been walking the halls of Congress with about 100 activists from 20 states from across the United States and Hawaii to come together on this day, the morning after the June 12th summit. And, you know, we visited many Democrats, and it was just extraordinary to me to hear that, you know, this alleged party of peace And I'm saying, with the exception of people like Barbara Lee and Bernie Sanders and Ro Khanna and Tulsi Gabbard, you know, it's just the establishment of the Democratic Party was so deflating. When here we are, we have a situation of a 70-year conflict. This is where 4 million people died, over 30,000 U.S. troops. You know, millions of Korean civilians. And, you know, that war ended in a stalemate. And a ceasefire was signed with a commitment by the military generals to come back and negotiate a peace agreement. And that promise has not been fulfilled. And here we are on the precipice of a historic breakthrough that could reset the dial in terms of U.S. and North Korea relations. And, you know, the Democrats are coming to the right of Donald Trump. It's like I'm having this kind of surreal moment.
The Democratic minority leader, Chuck Schumer, was like, this was downright dangerous. He said,
"Oh, I know. I mean, they sent a letter last week with all these ridiculous preconditions. And, you know, the truth is, I mean, North Korea advanced its nuclear capability the most under the Obama administration. The Obama administration and the Democrat hawks did nothing. They might have done good to normalize relations with Cuba and succeeded in the Iran deal. They let the North Korean situation just languish, and here we have a situation now where the Trump administration and President Trump, for his own narcissistic reasons, but to be honest with you, I mean, you know, I'm obviously a feminist and a longtime progressive, and it has been impossible for me to listen to more than a few minutes of Donald Trump. But when I hear him talk about Korea, it's almost as if he has allowed himself to actually, it's almost like he's a child, like listening for the first time. Oh my God, we're still at war with North Korea. We never signed a peace agreement. There's just a ceasefire. The millions of families are divided. We have a responsibility.